Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the Believe Knicks podcast, our last preseason episode. Matthew Miranda joined, as always, by Stacey Patton. The Knicks open their season on Wednesday against the Memphis Grizzlies. The NBA opens the season tomorrow night with four non-Knick teams playing. So today we're going to look a little bit around the league, see what kind of stories are standing out from each division, maybe do a couple predictions if we feel like it. Certainly talk about where we think of the Knicks now with the preseason behind them, because I know that my feelings have evolved as this preseason has gone on. Before we get started, so I had a really bizarre, almost perfect sports weekend where, you know, the Knicks played on Friday and they won. The Jets and Giants improbably just continue to roll. The only thing, oddly, that went off in my sports weekend was Man City, who's easily my best team, losing 1-0 to Liverpool. But every weekend now, I usually don't care about college football much, but I always take notice of Michigan now because Stacey, in a very understated way, Stacey's a big Michigan fan.
Understated. I appreciate it.
And so I've been tracking them, and I remember, like, early in the year, didn't they play Connecticut?
Yeah, they played. Yeah. I grew up in Connecticut. Most of my friends went to UConn. My sister went to UConn. So, yeah, they played Connecticut.
Yeah, so they played Connecticut. And I was going to.
If it was women's basketball, I would have been a lot less happy with the result.
I was going to bring it up to Stacey because I saw that. I think the last line I saw, Michigan was favored by like 49 or 50 points. And that only happens in college football. And whenever I see that line, I'm always like, oh, you got to take the underdog. Like, because it's just, it's so hard. Like, it's when you think about it in an abstract sense, any team in college that can field a football team, you assume, you know, you can't bet on them to lose. And then I think Michigan won by like 56 or something. So what I'm very curious about is I notice every week Michigan keeps on winning, Alabama loses to Tennessee. Stacey, is it possible that your Michigan Wolverines could be national title winners by the end of this season?
I'm not willing to go that far yet. They're really good.
Are they number three?
They're number three in one poll, number four in another.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I came to – so to give you a background, this is a Knicks podcast. I'm not going to stay too long. But I enrolled in Ann Arbor from the East Coast in 2007. My first week of college, I get there. And classes haven't started. And so, of course, you know, if you get there on Wednesday and you don't have class until the following Tuesday, right after Labor Day, you know, a bunch of 18-year-olds who are away from their parents for the first time, you know that we all just got into libraries and started studying, right? That's actually not what happened. I had a great week. It was amazing. And then Saturday morning, I remember Michigan was playing a team called Appalachian State. And I told my friends, maybe I should sell my ticket. You know, it's probably going to be a blowout. And I wish I sold my ticket, but not because Michigan blew Appalachian State out. It's because Michigan, coming off a year where they were ranked as high as number two in the country, lost a thriller to Ohio State that knocked them out of the championship race. They lost Appalachian State. And since then, Michigan has just been dominated by Ohio State. They just have been – I don't know if there's a good NBA analog. I guess what the Lakers – no, you can't even say the Lakers. I don't know. But last year they beat Ohio State. And this year – I mean, I could do a whole pod on, like, what's changed with the program, kind of the redemption of Jim Harbaugh. The guy says some stupid shit, but like – how he came back from how low they were a couple of years ago is, you know, there's some inspiration to take from that. And Yeah, it's, I mean, it's fun. And I'm an Eagles fan. Sorry, Matt, I presume you have some Giants sympathies.
I have Jets and Giants sympathies.
I have Jets sympathies because they're they're benign to me. The one time I've gone to a Jets game, it was against Philly, and I remember that year because the Eagles were actually good, but played two good teams, and the Jets were the Jets, and they were 2-0. Mm-hmm. All these Jets fans are talking shit to me, and the Eagles were 0-2. And then when the game happened, and it was more fun for me. But I like Jets fans. but like, yeah, I haven't seen either of my football teams lose so far. So that's been fun.
That's very interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen the Giants in person. I've seen the Jets play twice in Buffalo. Once was when Parcells was there and the Jets won in Buffalo to clinch like their first division title since I think like the '70s. And that was like awesome. And then, and this is one of like my most like clear visceral memories of childhood in like when I was about 13, this guy who lived behind us had season tickets to the Bills. We lived like about 2 hours away from Buffalo at the time, maybe like an hour and a half, but 2 hours from the stadium because it's west of the city. So he gives my dad two tickets when the Jets come to town and I'm all excited. I've never been to a football game. And the day of the game is the coldest day in Western New York in like 40 years. Like with the wind chill, it was like minus 40. And I remember my dad and me, like we put on all these extra socks and I put on my good boots. And I think I wore like thermal underwear and two pairs of sweatpants and maybe two coats, like bundled up as absolutely much as you could and still like walk as a human being. And I remember we drove all the way to Rich Stadium. These are the Bruce Coslett Jets. This is not a great time in Jet. Most of them aren't. This was not a good one. The Jets lost by 2 points in a game where they missed three field goals. It was so cold that my dad and I, we left the game at some point in the fourth because like it hurt. Like it hurt to be cold. Yeah, as we're driving home. As we're driving home, we hear the Jets miss the last field goal. So we feel a little better that like we didn't sit through it. I could not feel my toes until we pulled into the driveway of our house like 2 hours later. And to have all that happen and have the Jets lose by two when they miss three field goals is like the quintessential Jets experience.
I mean, I think there's good. I don't know if it's 20 years or 30 years. There's going to come a day when all football stadiums are indoors and we're going to be like, yeah. Why the fuck did we do that for so long?
You know, like, I mean,
like people are going to like, my freshman year, we played Ohio State, lost 14-3. It was here's the thing, right? I don't actually mind snow. Snow is nice. Yeah. And I don't mind 40 degree temperature, but freezing rain. And it was freezing rain, and when it gets into your you just mentioned this when it gets into your feet, oh my god, yep. When your feet are fucking cold, man, it's the worst. Yep. it is the worst feeling. It is worse than other more sensitive parts of your body being cold. That's my hot take for today. And it's just the worst. I've sat through some miserable football games, and the thing is, I've gone to Madison Square Garden in January when it was miserable outside. But once I got inside, I had a beer and I had, heating, and it was pretty nice. Yep. So maybe yes. That's yeah. But I think it's coming, right? A lot of the stadiums I think are going to put it in roofs. It gives an advantage to the home team, and I don't think. For whatever reason, people will still pay $300 to on Thanksgiving go watch Ann Arbor, Michigan, Ohio State, or go watch the Bills mm-hmm. against the Jets in Buffalo, which is pretty impressive, but it's got to happen at some point. But now that we're talking about Buffalo, and I promise everyone will get to basketball very quick, I gotta ask, because I've been to upstate New York, I've been to Rochester, I've never actually been to Buffalo. Are the wings all they're cracked up to be, and is there like a place you would actually recommend in Buffalo for wings, for Buffalo wings?
So there's I love Buffalo. I lived there for a couple different stints, and it's a really, really, really cool city. As far as the wings go, so everyone will tell you one of two places that you have to go to for wings, which is either Anchor Bar, which is the place that purportedly invented them, or this place, Duff's. I prefer Duff's. If you're going to go for the celebrity wing, I do Duff's. Obama's eaten at Duff's. A bunch of like big-time athletes have eaten there. Duff's, they will give you, like, you sit down at a table and you order your wings, and they just bring you a, like a, it looks like a cheap little white plastic, like cylindrical container. And then they bring you a plate of just like incredible wings. And like, you just, it's like you're in fucking the Prancing Pony or something in Lord of the Rings. Like, you just sit there and drink and devour chicken wings, and they're really good. And you just toss the bones in the bucket and you keep on going. The best pizza, the best chicken wings I ever had in Buffalo, and this I think speaks to what makes Buffalo chicken wings so cool. Like, there was literally a bodega around the corner from me on Grant in Buffalo, and they had the best chicken wings I've had in my life. And it was just a little run-of-the-mill mom and pop bodega that you would never, you might not even notice if you weren't looking. Those are the, like, you can find little treasures like that all over Buffalo. How do you feel about
You know, but you look at the Atlantic Division, besides Toronto, the Canadians are the nice ones, right? Every other team's got some controversy, including our beloveds. And the first thing I'll talk about is Boston, which has had a tumultuous offseason. The first news that came out was that Robert Williams, who's been a revelation for them, he has gotten better after signing his contract. There is a Nick who I think there is an analog for that too. And save that later for later in the show, but he's actually improved his play since getting paid, which is maybe something people should take stock of when they like talk about these contracts and like, especially for heavily, you know, it's something people should take count of. But
especially with the cap going up too, you know.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I think it mostly, nobody's talking about Tyler Hero suddenly losing motivation. I'll put it like that, right? But people love talking about Mitchell Robinson doing that. People love to talk about Jordan Poole doing that. That's all I'm going to say about that. But on the Celtics, you have Williams, who was really important. You have their coach embroiled in controversy. I mean, it's almost like if they had kept him on and just gone through it, like what happened with Derek Fisher, we could see that. If they had fired him, we could see that. But this limbo of having, forget the fact that their coach is inexperienced, they've now had created this limbo situation. Is he a lame duck? Is this a tryout? Is this a buy time until they get a better coach, right? Is there any chance Ime Udoka comes back? I don't know. He doesn't have a very... I guess the Celtics are playing the Neil Long... the long game. But, you know, it's just... it looks like a very volatile situation for a team that, by all other respects, is extremely talented. I'd probably freak out less about Rob Williams being out because Jason Tatum is 24 years old, and he was just the top scorer on a team that made the finals. And for as much as his playoff performance, his finals performance really left something to be desired, it's also encouraging because there's so much easy fruit for him to pick up. So I am on talent. You can't hurt them, but yes, there's a lot of controversy there. There is Philadelphia, which I think is the most talented team I would say in the NBA. The Clippers argument? Yeah, I would. I think Harden's decline was overstated. I expect him to be really good next year, and they have Tyrese Maxey. And number two in that category would probably be the Clippers for me, but I just said James Harden's name, right? Guy known for strip clubs and sometimes showing up fat, sometimes showing up skinny, and depending on what day of the week it is, right? I mean, like, we've seen 20-pound or what it looks like weight shifts from him, and we've seen the same level of effort energy shifts, right? We've seen there's other players who have come to – Dennis Rodman came to camp out of shape, but he'd be in shape when the season started. Harden is a volatile thing, but if he's back to even 75-80% of his peak, you combine that with Joel Embiid and a growing Tyrese Maxey, and they still have Tobias Harris. They're cutting guys that other NBA teams really want because they're just that deep. But Harden is kind of the controversy case. And then Brooklyn, of course, has never had much media attention. So actually, do you think Brooklyn could be controversial? There's no one on the team who's controversial, right? They don't have like any anti-vaxxers.
I can't even think of half their stars.
Anyone who gets into Twitter fights for no fucking reason. Anyone who had to leave a team to join a team after he lost 3-1 to them just to get rings.
You are taking it far back today.
Anyone who is always hurt coming off an Achilles. Anyone who hasn't taken a jump shot in their entire career in the NBA, despite being quote-unquote a point guard. Anyone who sat out most of last year and we have no idea when he's actually going to play and got dumped by Maya Jama. Other than that, there's no real... there's nothing like that in Brooklyn, right?
Oh, my God.
If there is, I don't know. I might change my opinion. But assuming none of that stuff is true... Oh, does any of their players believe the world is flat? If none of that stuff is true, then yeah, like... Why would you think they have controversy? Are all their fans hipsters who moved to Brooklyn in the last like 18 months? I don't know. If that's not true, then yeah, they're a very uncontroversial team.
You would have to assume that the Celtics have candidates in mind in case Missoula doesn't seem to have it early on, right? Like they have to have some contingencies in case that doesn't work out.
I just think they've done it so weirdly, though, right?
It is. It is weird. I think
they have a contingency in place, by the way, and I'll go through that in a second.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I literally cannot think of a team that has ever had this circumstance in any sport where you...
Isn't it weird to you, Matt, that... Like, if it was really as serious as being, as it sounds like it sounds like he actually sexually harassed, a woman he was interested in. We don't know all the facts. I don't want to speak definitively, but I don't want to say frustrating, but what's tough to reconcile is like, if that's the case, he shouldn't be there anymore. He should be fired. And if it's not the case, a suspension seems harsh, right? So how did it end up with a suspension? It's that in-between thing that is weird to me.
So I think this is the first time that I can ever say this in my life. It's very exciting. But I spoke to someone who has much closer of an ear to Sports Insider stuff than I do, and specifically had... I trust this person very much, and they offered some specifics about what happened that hasn't come out yet. And I will tell you that if this person is correct about what happened, then it may, then like to me, the treatment hasn't made sense at all until I heard the specific of like what they say happened. And then I was like, oh, yeah, this probably is what you would do then. So,
well, but that's actually what that's still, because like it seems like a very binary situation, right? either you were sexually harassing someone or you just had an affair. If you just had an affair, I don't think that warrants a year suspension. If you're sexually harassing someone, I think that warrants firing. So, like, I can't, I'm not going to pressure you to give up a source or something, but the idea of what was the situation that would lead to this specific penalty is a little bit, I can't conceive it, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised that they've kept it quiet this long, and I'm surprised that this is the, like, it feels like the NBA is usually pretty good about public relations kinds of stuff, and I feel like they just let this from the start sit out there as like, well, that's weird, and never really came up with an end game for it. Like when the initial Robert Sarver penalty was announced, it didn't feel settled because a lot of people felt like, wow, this isn't even like, this doesn't seem like nearly enough. And the NBA responded in a way that tied up the loose end and made the story go away. I'm a little surprised that this, I think they're just hoping like, hey, the season will start and Zion's back and Luka's cool, and we just won't want to talk about this anymore. But I don't see how, you know, the Celtics are one of the handful of teams in the league that are ready to win a title now. They were two wins away a year ago. They're a pretty well-known franchise. Like, this isn't the story.
There are two marquee franchises in the NBA, right? And they're one of them. So they're not like a pretty premier franchise. They are the premier franchise.
Yeah. There's no getting away from this. So I'm surprised at how that's gone. Do you think...
Go ahead. I was going to ask, and I don't want to press you for too much info. From what you've heard, do you think the suspension is kind of a... It's like when you get, get separated before getting divorced, you know.
Yeah.
Is that what this is, or do they actually want him to come back?
Just my opinion. This isn't what anyone told me, but from everything I heard, it makes me think that that is strictly a legal strategy. And that this relationship is done. That the only reason he's suspended and not fired, I think, is because they're trying to legally work out, you know, if we fire him, is he going to be able to countersue? Whereas if we do it this way, does it go easier? I would be shocked if he is coaching the Celtics ever again.
And do you think that his offense was not egregious enough? Okay, and we're getting to, but like, do you think he'll coach again somewhere?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It is very serious what actually happened.
It's for us, for someone that young and that accomplished after last season to already be in a position where I'm able to literally like not know if he's going to get a job again. Like, yeah, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, makes sense.
So let me ask you, you pretty much, I think, answered it. I was going to ask you this, but you sound pretty comfortable that you think James Harden can be the second best player on a team that wins the championship?
If that first best player is Joel Embiid?
Yeah. Yeah, specifically that
team. I've always thought he can be. I've thought for most of his career he can be the best player on a team. Mm-hmm. But on a team that has who I believe is a top three player, yeah, of course.
Nice. All right.
And that specific player, I mean, Chris Paul was great too. Don't get me wrong. I thought Harden was the better player, but that specific player is the perfect complement, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That specific player is maybe not defense player of the year level, but he's a really good rim protector. And when Embiid in the playoffs, like Embiid is an elite defender.
Yes.
Yeah. And can score from, I mean, he's not, you can't really stop Embiid. There's no one in the NBA who can stop Embiid on offense.
No.
So, like, I mean, you have to send doubles, right? The only thing that ever stops them is, when he's off the, that's it. That's literally all that happens to Philadelphia is he has to sit and they just get fucking wrecked.
If he could play 48 minutes, they'd be like unstoppable.
Yeah, like the year that Kawhi and the Raptors won the championship, that series.
Yeah.
When Embiid was on, the Sixers outscored them by 87 points in 7 games.
Yeah.
Which is not to diminish the Raptors. I'm just saying he's a fucking insane player. Like, I don't think people appreciate it. Like, I think a lot of people are like, Giannis is clearing away above Embiid. And I'm like, no. And I think Giannis is amazing. But like, I think Embiid is still underappreciated a little bit. Embiid, Jokic to me are the top three players. And I think that the way it's viewed, like, they're all really close to each other, you know? I do think Jokic has deserved both his MVPs. Spoiler alert, he's my pick for MVP again. And it's going to be awesome. But I think, like, people talk about Philadelphia and how stacked they are, but, like, they don't, like, no, Embiid is really that dude, you know? Like, he's good.
Yeah, he is. He's a monster on both ends. So, Central Division, the land of the Chicago Bulls, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, you're not going to join me in shit-talking on Brooklyn? I thought that was the whole point of that.
I think you covered it all.
So talk about Boston, Brooklyn, and Philly. All right, we're good.
And I think Toronto will be fun to watch. And is legitimately either a rim how to say this? If the Raptors had an elite rim protector and or an elite scoring wing, I would be very, very interested in seeing them against anybody in the East.
You don't think Siakam is an elite scoring wing? Elite is strong, just for scoring.
I think
he's an elite wing, but he's not elite scoring wing.
Yeah, exactly. He, to me, I'm thinking, I want someone that, like, okay, this person can lead you offensively to, you know, winning a series in the second round. I could like Donovan Mitchell level more. Like, I can't see Siakam scoring, leading them past the Bucks. Like, I just don't see that. But speaking of, you have in the Central the Bucks, the Cavaliers, two best teams, Chicago in the middle, and then the Pistons and the Pacers are something else entirely. I'm really, really interested in how Chicago plays this season, because Lonzo Ball still has this indeterminate recovery timeline from, I think it's a knee issue. Whatever his issue is, he's still not back. It's taken longer and longer than they thought it would. They thought he was going to be back at some point last season. He ended up missing that whole year. He's still not ready for the start of this season. I think that sucks as a fan, just because they're a much more interesting team when they have him and Caruso together. But I'm really excited because they have Caruso back, and I'm really, really excited to see Patrick Williams this season and what he's able to do for them, because I think any leveling up that they're going to take as a team right now, other than getting Ball back, is going to come from Patrick Williams, like, improving. And I think he could be really interesting. I think he could be the difference between the Bulls being a team that really does have a shot at getting to the second round, and a team that is more in the Knick atmosphere of, like, hopefully you can host a play-in game. What do you think?
Well, I think there's one team that the Bulls weren't better than last year, and they finished ahead of them, and they ain't better than them this year, and they're not finishing ahead of us either. The Knicks finished with a better net rating than the Bulls. The Bulls won 9 more games. Part of that was, yes, the Bulls have 2 very effective isolation scorers in DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. And that matters. But the Knicks have a pretty good one too. And I think without Lonzo, I think that defense is going to fall apart. I mean, they're hyping up Ayo Dosunmu starting at point guard.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I'm a Pat Williams believer, but man, like, what Caruso and Lonzo did for that defense, and I am a Chicago Bulls hater, I'm a 90s kid who was a Knicks fan. What else do you want from me? But I actually really appreciated what they did, because I spent all offseason last year when people were hyping up the Bulls and their offensive talent. I was like, yeah, but they don't have rim protection. And you're not shoring that up just with Caruso and Lonzo. And they proved me wrong. I loved that experiment. They said, we're not going to have a rim protector. We got Vucevic. We have two poor defenders in LaVine and DeRozan. But we got two awesome ones in Lonzo and Caruso. And they might be undersized, but we can play Lonzo at the four. We've seen him even play in the Knicks, right? Like, before Randall's kind of implosion, Lonzo did a really good job on him. Mm-hmm. In a game where otherwise he had a lot of success. I just love teams going against the grain. And we can talk about Cleveland in a second, because they're doing that in a way of their own. But without Lonzo, I don't know that Io is on that level. I don't know that DeRozan can replicate what he did last year. If he does and proves me wrong, all the better. It's not something I would bet on. And I think they're a team that probably will have less luck in close games. And I've said this the whole offseason. I think the Knicks were finished 11th. I think there's two teams they're going to pass. One is Charlotte, because a lot of offseason troubles. Obviously, Miles Bridges today just came out. I mean, he wasn't a key player for them. But James Bouknight, their lottery pick from last year, apparently has... been pulled over a bunch of times for driving one under the influence.
LaMelo's not going to be ready for the start of the season either.
Yeah.
Ankle sprain maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Knicks have specifically drafted players that seem to be very like Quickly is the most Christian dude ever. RJ Barrett just lives in the gym. Obi is Obi's just like the fun guy in class. Like, I can never imagine Obi just being like, and maybe I'd be proven wrong, but like, I can never imagine Obi being like a quote unquote troublemaker. No. I just use the word troublemaker. I really am getting old. I'm only 33, guys. Don't worry. But maybe I'm older at heart now at this point. But yeah, like, they've seemed to seek that out. But like, yeah, like, you look at a team like Charlotte and they have had a lot of issues. And some of their younger players were very talented. And that obviously doesn't include LaMelo. It's just, he got hurt. But the Knicks are better than the Hornets at this point. I think they're better than the Bulls. I think the Bulls got worse, and I think the Knicks got better. And we played them well last year. And we had the same net rating as them. Like, they're really susceptible. I don't think they have an answer for a guy like Jalen Brunson. They did not have an answer for Julius Randle last year. And they don't really have an answer for RJ Barrett. And they never have an answer for our bench. So,
does Donovan Mitchell going to Cleveland change their upside to where it's any farther than it would have been without him? If the Cavs were healthy and had not traded for Donovan Mitchell, I could see them getting to the second round and then losing. Do you see right now Cleveland as a team? Because I feel like they made it's not just, they added Donovan Mitchell. Great. It's a major shift in their approach to go from, marketing it to three and, maybe it was a core, and now it's, it's a major, major change in their style of play. Do you feel like for what they gave up to get Mitchell, this is a team that could get to the conference finals, that could beat Boston or Milwaukee or someone like that in the second round?
They have the player who eventually is a good bet to neutralize Giannis or be able to stand up to him in that way.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm talking about Dean Wade. I'm talking about
Travis Ware's school of stoppers.
I think that move for Donovan Mitchell, everyone talks about Garland and he's a really good player. That move had to do with Evan Mobley, they have a generational prospect. They have a really good point guard prospect. I'm not like Darius Garland made an All-Star game, great player. They have a generational prospect, and they got to pair him with an all-NBA level point guard. He hasn't made it yet, but he's on that level.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think this is the year yet. I've argued with this with Schwinney on my other pod a lot. And I think he makes good points. One, in the playoffs, what they're betting on is this. Garland and Mitchell, just like we feared that Brunson and Mitchell would be, is not a good defensive backcourt.
Right.
They don't really have an answer at wing. Like, Lowry's not playing the three anymore. The answer is Okoro, not a reliable shooter, a pretty good defender, but more of a perimeter defender than like that long switch. Like, he has a shorter wingspan, and
yeah.
He's smaller than RJ, you know, and RJ is like good size for it. Like, RJ can play the three,
yeah,
but he doesn't have great size for the three, right? So they're in this position where they have a hole on a pretty important position, but they're really betting that Jared Allen and Evan Mobley together can shore up any of the defensive weaknesses. It's like Chicago, right? Like, we have some defensive players in key places. It doesn't matter that, like, we're playing a couple of bad defenders together. I'm not sure it quite cuts that way. I think for that to work, I think Evan Mobley has to become the kind of shooter, which I think he's 2 years away from being. I think the guy can shoot. He certainly shoots really well against the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
But he still finished, like, I think 28% from three last year. Mm. He's probably a year away from that happening. You're probably going to have some spacing issues with Jared Allen, and I don't think that's going to matter against a team like the Knicks. Like, I think they're good. I mean, it's tough for me to see us beating them in a 7-game series, but against a team like Milwaukee, yeah. Milwaukee has the defenders to make life tough on those guards. And I don't think Mobley and Allen together are at the level where they could really neutralize Giannis. I think Cleveland can win like 2, maybe even 3 games against them. I'm still picking Milwaukee in a series over them. And as good as Jared Allen is, they don't have an answer for Embiid. Like, that's just a fact. Jared Allen's a really good defender, but he's not stopping Joel Embiid. And their perimeter defender sure as hell aren't stopping James Harden. So I think I have them. I'm not sure what to do with Boston, but tentatively, I think I have Cleveland finishing third. I think they'll look better in the regular season than they would be as a playoff contender because, like, there's going to be nights where they put up 140, like multiple nights, because Garland and Mitchell and like two lob threats who are pretty versatile centers, like, they're going to put up a lot of points. Rubio's like a great piece off the bench for them too.
Yeah, I like that. I like that for them.
But when it bogs down in the postseason and teams can throw some size at Mitchell and Garland, they're not there yet. I think what's going to take them, quote unquote, there is either adding a wing or Mobley. Like, actually, I think Mobley can beat Tim Duncan, but he's not there yet, right?
Yeah.
The sooner he gets to that level, you know, that's I think. And then if they still have Mitchell and Garland in their prime, that's where I'm like, okay, really interested. I guess see that. And if 2 weeks in the season I'm seeing Mobley just being a monster, I might revise my expectation on this team. I want to see what Evan Mobley I'm getting. If it's just incremental growth, they're going to be a great team, probably a top 4 seed. If it's an explosion, then that changes everything.
Yeah, I think that they're going to hammer bad teams and struggle more against some of the better ones, and probably see that in the playoffs too. If we go Southeast, I don't know how much I think... I don't know how much I think DeJounte Murray can improve Atlanta. Like, because I don't know what to make of Atlanta. Like, Atlanta, we all saw 2 years ago, team goes on a run, gets to the conference finals, is two wins away from the NBA finals, has an all-NBA, you know, offensive fulcrum. They've got a great defensive center. They've got a great young defensive center. They've got some wings with size. It's a very exciting team. And now they add...
Notice you didn't mention their point guard.
Well, he was the fulcrum, I meant. But they add an all-star point guard, a guy who is supposed to be a very great defensive point guard. He is doesn't average a triple-double, but like is someone who's up in that range, around like 20, and then I think like 8 or 9 and 7, or I don't know. I don't know if Murray was quite that high as a rebounder, but you think, oh, okay, we have added a two-way all-star guard to our team full of great youngsters. This will let Trey start to work off ball more. This will spare him some ball handling responsibilities. It spares him having to be the guy who's going up against their you know, in a series. You know, now you can hide him much more on defense because you've got DeJounte Murray there. But kind of like similarly with Cleveland, I don't know what to make of Atlanta's ultimate upside, because I don't know how to make from 2 years ago, they look like, oh God, like this team is here they come. And then last year, no. Where do the Hawks fit into the East for you?
They're the 8 seed. I still have them over the Knicks. I'm starting to reconsider that. Here's the thing. I went from that series thinking we should win it to realizing that we lost in 5 games to realizing that a lot of those games are pretty close. And as much as was made about Trae Young, their offense as a whole didn't blow us out of the water. They were mostly in the low 100s every game. So they had success, and they obviously had more success than we did on offense. But I'm still going to put them ahead of us. But am I putting them over Toronto? No, this doesn't put them over Toronto for me. Right. They're betting on DeAndre. I mean, they have upside, right? They're betting on DeAndre Herter. DeAndre Herter. Yeah, let's call them that.
That's an interesting player.
DeAndre Hunter and Kevin Herter.
Kevin Hunter.
as wings on this team, right? They're betting on those guys to be versatile. And I think what they're also betting on is that when Trey goes to the bench, they can continue to win. When I looked at their split stats, it's pretty surprising. I thought this would be a much bigger gap, but over the last 2 years, they have a plus 3.68 net rating with Trae Young on the floor, minus 1.5 with him off the floor. And a big part of that is that they're 5 points worse on defense. They are a full 10 points better on offense. So both of those things check out, but you know, maybe you get some of the best of both worlds, right? When Trey goes off the floor, your offense doesn't tank, and you still get some of the same defensive benefits. That's what I mean. It's the same thing that the Rockets did with James Harden and Chris Paul, right? Almost, I wouldn't say it's less about them being on the floor together, but it's also like, yeah, you have 48 minutes of elite guard play. Yeah, so I think DeJounte Murray is an elite guard. He had a 51% true shooting percentage, but he also averaged near a triple-double. So it kind of, your mileage may vary there. Mm-hmm. I think he's an underrated off-ball player. I think his defense will help. But I still think against a team like us, like, who is Trey going to hide on? Like, Trey can't guard Evan Fournier. Neither of our starting backcourt can guard Trey either, but he can't hide on a lot of these teams, right? And Atlanta's managed against it, but that's what's going to be concerning. So I don't think it makes them a contender. Like them adding DeJounte Murray is not the same as Cleveland adding Donovan Mitchell. A, because Donovan Mitchell is better than DeJounte Murray, and B, because I would take Mobley Garland as the supplementary piece of that over Trey, even. And which is bold because Trey is a borderline top 10 player, but I think Mobley's going to be awesome. And I think Garland's pretty good, and they have Jared Allen. So, like, that was a pretty good team for Mitchell to go to. But, I'm definitely curious to your thoughts on Atlanta. So, definitely been a thorn in our side the last couple of years. Yeah. Although, no, not – we've won the regular season series both years. It's just the elephant in the room, right? So,
Yeah. Let's go to the West. Let's go to the Southwest, which in the past was, the Texas teams, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans. The Texas teams, not where they used to be. I do a over-under bet with a friend of mine every year where we both take like 15 over-under bets. And Spurs had the lowest expected win total, and I took them under. I don't expect much from them. I don't expect much from Houston, nor do those teams expect much of themselves. I'm really curious about the other three. Memphis, because I feel like Vegas is pretty smart about things and they can't predict the playoffs, but I've been very surprised on over-unders and seeing people talking preseason basketball. It's almost as if, I hate when people say almost, because they just say it's as if Memphis didn't do what they did last year. I keep reading about Denver and Dallas and the Clippers and the Warriors, of course, and the Sun. And I feel like it's odd to me that a team this young, led by, I know Jaren Jackson, I think, is he out for like a, he out for months, or am I thinking of a different season?
He is out for a good amount of time. I also think there's some uncertainty to it, but when it's a big with an injury, that's always he's a big with a foot injury. So
yeah, is that what it is?
But people are gonna be conservative there. And in my opinion, he is their No, I don't think he's their best player. I think Bane's their best player. I think he's their second best player, and he's very important. And if you noticed that I did not say another player instead of those two, that was not a mistake. But yeah,
do elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their record without Ja Morant last year. They lost like two games. They're an awesome team without Ja Morant. They had like Jaren Jackson. I'll say this. This was wrong at the time, but it wasn't it wasn't because Jaren Jackson isn't good. The draft where Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton and all those guys were in the draft, I had Jaren Jackson number one. Yeah. Jaren Jackson was my top prospect. He went number four.
Yeah.
And I'd probably still take him over Ayton. I'd probably take him over in that draft over everyone besides Luka, Trey, and probably SGA. Like a guy who can block shots, switch on defense and hit threes, and he can body a guy and get a bucket, like he's really good. Like he looks like this generation's Andre Kirilenko, to be honest.
Interested.
But going back to Memphis, I do think Ja is a great player, but Desmond Bane I think is still underrated. Like he's not like, I love Quinn Grimes, but people who compare Quinn Grimes to Desmond Bane, it's like Desmond Bane is a fucking tank and he can get to the rim, he can pass. He is also an elite shooter. Like,
yeah, that guy's on a different level.
Like, you have good shoot, like Evan Fournier is a great shooter.
Yeah,
Bane is on a different level from him.
Yeah.
Evan Fournier is the best shooter on the Knicks, and Bane's like, Bane is the kind of guy where you're like, okay, I don't want to get crazy, but if I'm going to give someone a Klay Thompson comp, it's him. It's Buddy Hield, right? Like, there's like a handful of guys who can say those kind of things about
him. Yeah.
And he can do all this other stuff. Dylan Brooks is a little hit or miss for me, but, they have Brandon Clark, they have all these guys. That to me is more like, Ja Morant you know, provides a spark. He can get them a bucket. He's very important, but it's really, it's the team for me. I think they're, but that said, the reason why some of the teams that were mentioned, the Clippers made the playoffs, I believe, last year, or the play-in.
No, they lost in the, right. They lost in the play-in.
But they made that without
Kawhi.
Yeah. Without their two, the Kawhi or PG.
Yeah, he was out at the end. Yeah, yeah.
And I think they have a top three coach. I would put him there with Spoelstra and Popovich and Ty Lue. So that's why they're jumping. You know, you have, I don't know why, I think Dallas is going to take a step back, even though I think Luka is that good. Just
because, yeah.
I do think Brunson's going to hurt a lot for them. I don't trust any of their playmaking, and their nature of playing hurts. And then you have Golden State. I could see Memphis jumping Golden State because I think the Poole Draymond thing could be more problematic than initially thought. But even if it wasn't, Klay and Draymond looked washed in that run. I'm just going to say that. Like, Steph is still insane.
I got to give Klay another year, though. That was his first year off of the ACL. Like,
yeah, but what he's
guys always 30, look better in year two off of that.
When they're 34? 30.
Is he 30? He's not 34, is he?
How old is Klay Thompson? He's younger than me. Dude, I'm fucking old. He's 32. He's apparently about 5 months.
Yeah, I'll give him another year and see how he looks. But the point still stands. Memphis played them tough last year, and certainly, you know.
Do you think Draymond's washed?
No, I don't think he's washed. But I think once he's outside of that system, his value goes down a lot more.
Yeah, it's tough for me. It's Draymond and Klay to me are kind of like the Horford proposition, where I think that's a fair point, and maybe I should, but I was not impressed with Klay last year in the playoffs at all.
I really
think they would lose to Boston because of that, because I specifically thought they don't have the Klay Thompson that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
And then Denver is the one team where I was like, yeah, but there's a reason. Jamal Murray is really underrated. And I think last year was their first year with Aaron Gordon, I think.
No, he was there. Well, first full season, I think, yeah.
Yes, first full season with Aaron Gordon was last year. And I still think they have the best player in the Western Conference. With all apologies to Luka. I will say, for a one-game sample, LeBron is still probably the best, but they're not going to make the playoffs. If that's a hot take, but the Los Angeles Lakers have the second best player of all time and are not going to make the playoffs. That's something you probably never thought you would hear.
Yeah, but
that's going to happen again.
Wow.
But I think Murray is going to be awesome. I think another year with Gordon, I think that's a really good front court. And keep an eye. I think my pick for sixth man of the year is going to come out of Denver. So
this is a bonus. Highland prediction.
Yeah. But getting back to Memphis, I think it's an exciting team. I think they'll be in that. They'll probably finish in the top four. There are the Knicks opening night. I think the Knicks actually match up pretty well with them, but they're the kind of team that has given the Knicks trouble, and I'm interested to see how it shakes out.
I really wish Obi and Grimes weren't like in danger of missing that game.
Yeah, I mean, for those who are Cam Reddish fans, it gives you another shot.
It's Cam Reddish season.
But you're right. Like, Grimes really was like, if you look at the Knicks' most frustrating games last year, there was a blowout against New Orleans. There was a blowout against Minnesota. There's a blowout against Charlotte. They seem to struggle against teams with athleticism and
youth. Yep. Absolutely. And Miles Bridges destroyed the Knicks last year.
Yeah. And that's not even a Julius thing. It's just like he's getting down court. Mm-hmm. New Orleans as a whole, I mean, Jose Alvarado obviously was great, but Grimes was a noticeable difference maker there. And Obi, Obi's defense is, I'm still probably underrating it, but it's also like he can counter them on the other end. Like, you want to push up the floor, that's fine, but I'm going to run back too. And, you know, I'm catching passes of everyone. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at there.
So, looking at the Northwest Division, are you as excited about the Timberwolves as I am? I don't know what their ultimate ceiling is as far as the postseason. Like, I don't. Could the Timberwolves be in the conference finals? I don't know. Like, maybe, but I'm just really interested in seeing them try what they're doing, because I cannot think of a Twin Towers experiment that any team has ever done that I've seen where one of the bigs, you know, happens to be an elite 3-point shooter, and the other one is an elite screen setter. You know, like when you talk Olajuwon and Ralph Sampson, or you're talking Patrick Ewing and Bill Cartwright, like those are more like redundancies.
By the way, I love that you mentioned Bill Cartwright and Patrick Ewing and not the team that, not Tim Duncan and David Robinson. That's true. Well, you know, I have a story that I hope everyone will find funny. I was 9 or 10 years old, and I have an uncle who went to school in Oklahoma and was a Spurs fan. And I know that makes less sense, but at the time, Oklahoma didn't have a team. There's a team called the Seattle Supersonics for our younger listeners. but he was a Spurs fan. That was a miracle run, and Larry Johnson hit the, you know, had the 4-point play, and we were in the finals, and he was like, the Suns are going to, and we were like, who are you going to pick? And I was like, Knicks in 7. And he's like, nah, Spurs in 4. And I was like, why? And he was like, they have David Robinson and Tim Duncan. Like, who's guarding both of them? He's like, we have Camby. He was like, all right, who else? And I was like, LJ, Larry Johnson's going to guard Tim Duncan.
Chris Dudley,
watch baby. Larry Johnson. And at the time, I have to say that was just, I was 9 years old, and that was 100% serious argument. I was like, Larry Johnson can shut down Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
And actually, I would have loved to see prime Larry Johnson against Tim Duncan. That would have been fun. I don't think he shut him down, but prime Larry Johnson was that kind of player. A lot of people have compared Zion to him, actually. But yeah, that was a tangent, but. That was the kind of homer I was when I first became a fan. So maybe I haven't come that far.
Mm-hmm. This division is I don't know if the anti-tanking measures, you know, tanking is an energy, it's a vibe, and like you can't create or destroy. so I think it just evolves. And the Thunder and the Jazz, I find no less shameless than what maybe the Hinky Sixers are the extreme example, but I don't see anything more noble about what OKC or Utah are doing this season. And the Thunder, and I know this as someone who's bet on them the last couple of years to finish over and been fucked each time when they haven't, the Thunder have become villains to me, and I don't know how they get away with it. I guess there's nobody cares about them as a franchise. They, for months last year, just completely gave up. Like, oh, Alexander, Gilgeous Alexander. Yeah, he doesn't feel good. He's going to miss the rest of the season.
Funnily enough, you know, the one team they didn't give up against and won both games against?
The Lakers. They killed the Lakers. That was hilarious. That was amazing.
The Lakers are the second biggest city in America. Yep. They also won both their games against the largest city in America.
The Knicks?
Yes. Including.
Oh, I forgot. Oh, yep. God. Oh, God. Well, to be fair, I think Alexander was great in one of those games. I think they played. Well, whatever. I can't defend losing twice to the Thunder one way or the other. But
with both second half leads. This, and it was in the middle of that stretch with 3-17. So.
Yeah. All right. My computer is okay. I got about 15 minutes of juice left, so let's hop to the Pacific. where I'm just going to say is, and even though they're the least interesting team to me in the division, I am going to start with Sacramento just because I want it out there that I always feel as a Knicks fan, a kind of camaraderie with Sacramento Kings fans. I think they're in a lot of ways the Knicks of the West Coast. And for that reason, you know what? Like, it's like if what they really, really want is just to get in the play-in tournament, and to them that snaps their postseasonless drought, I'm all here for that. Like, I want Sacramento at the end of this season to feel good about something. If it's losing in the play-in, great. I'm just putting my heart out there. I am my Western Conference team this year, besides Minnesota, is going to be Sacramento. You are now free to talk about any of the actually interesting teams in the Pacific Division.
I would say Sacramento is interesting. There's a few interesting things. They have Davion Mitchell, who was a pretty good, great point of attack defender who showed some downhill capability. What does he do in year two? De'Aaron Fox is always a young player that has seemed a step away from really reaching his potential, but when on, he's got blazing speed and passing ability, but he hasn't put it together. But finished off the year strong, which was in no part unrelated to them adding Domantas Sabonis. And the last thing I'll say is, they drafted Keegan Murray. Talked with the Daily Sabonis. I don't think we actually put this pot out, but we talked about him. We talked with the Daily Sabonis about drafting Keegan Murray, and he I think he had said that he wanted Jaden Ivey, but he was like, I have had to tell Kings fans, if we draft Keegan Murray, you shouldn't be shitting on this dude. Like, he's awesome. And it reminds me a little bit of Obi. Like, Obi, we took over Tyrese Maxey. I mean, Tyrese Maxey went way later, so this is not a hindsight thing, but like, yeah, I probably would have preferred Tyrese Maxey at that pick, or maybe Tyrese Halliburton. At the time, I wanted Kira Lewis or Devin Vassell. Only one of those.
I was high on Kira Lewis.
I love Kira Lewis. Yeah. Devin Vassell, I think, still could be better than Obi Toppin. He's pretty solid. They're probably a similar level player. But we took Obi over. Tyrese Maxey is like the guy, I think, who's been the best of the guys we passed on. I think he's way better than Tyrese Halliburton, for those who don't agree. I also think Kobe's better than Halliburton, but that's going to be a little bit hotter of a take. But we took him, but he still turned out to be a good player. I think Keegan Murray could be like that. I think he's a little bit better of a prospect than Obi was, especially on defense, and he's just a more reliable three-point shooter. But I think, like, I think Ivy is going to be a superstar. Like, I really think he's going to be good. There's nothing I saw in preseason that makes me change that. And I think Keegan is going to be a very good player. But it would be like, I think Keegan is going to be something like, he's not the same type of game, but I think he's going to be an Al Horford type of player. Just like a guy who you're like, he feels like an all-star. Some years he is like one of those top 25 players. And I think Ivy is going to be better than that. So, like, can you complain about a pick like that? I don't know. I don't think so. I think Kings fans are going to be happy with Murray, even though they pass on Ivy. And those situations are always interesting. Look, I mean, the greatest player of all time went number three.
Yep.
And the team that picked number one doesn't get criticized for that, because the guy they took happened to end up top 10 himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as the rest of the Pacific Division, I'm interested. The Lakers are pretty interesting to me. They added a couple of interesting guards and Lonnie Walker. They drafted Max Christie, who, like, this is a team that's desperately in need of 3-and-D players.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of guys. They had guys like Malik Monk, who were excellent scorers. They could play next to LeBron and feast. They had a guy like Austin Reeves, who was a terrific defender. They had very few two-way players. I'm not even going to touch the Russell Westbrook situation. I think that'll figure it itself out if they can add these guys. But they need guys to emerge as two-way players who are reliable in offense, can shoot high 30s from three, play off LeBron, and defend and switch and be good team defenders on defense. Lonnie Walker was not that in San Antonio, but the early returns in preseason have been good. And Max Christie could fit that. Austin Reeves was very promising as a rookie.
Yeah, he was.
It wouldn't surprise me to see this team get into the playoffs as like a lower seed. And I don't think anybody wants to face LeBron in the first round, you know?
No, the reason I'm down on, like, I can see, especially the combination of motivated LeBron plus a lot of like young players on their second contracts. Like, I could see the Lakers actually surprising people and playing well, especially if Anthony Davis at all returns to being something like Anthony Davis. I just think they have still, like last year, like absolutely no depth. Like, there's no way that you can count. And they would need LeBron to play at least, I would guess, like 75 games. They need Anthony Davis to play 70 games. And I think right from there, I would take the under on both of those. You're right. I think I think for them, it's all about get to April healthy. If they get to the play-in and LeBron is healthy and AD is healthy, that's probably enough right there where, like, they got a good shot to get in. And like you said, I don't want to be Denver. And in the first round, I get the Lakers when I'm, like, the 2 seed and they're the 7. Like, even Golden State, I assume. If Golden State finished first and the Lakers were 8th, I would obviously expect Golden State to win, but I wouldn't expect the Warriors to feel like, ooh, we dodged a bullet with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who guards LeBron on the Lakers anymore. I don't have faith in Draymond Green anymore. I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. And I don't think Wiggins, as much as he's improved, and he's a really good player, really good defender, it's LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Like, you get that guy in a playoff series, there's nobody who's going to be happy about that.
He's a cheat code. It's a whole other thing.
So can he get to the play-in? And the West does lack depth. I think they can do it.
I think they can, but again, I think, like, for them, it's going to come down so much to health and timing of injuries. Do you still feel like Anthony Davis can turn things around, or do you feel like we've always talked about, like, if he's ever healthy, like, we know how great he'll be, and he hasn't been healthy, and I'm guessing that's why his shooting has fallen off a cliff since the bubble, but are you still an Anthony Davis believer?
I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I have no idea. Like, yeah. I think that the bubble was probably an anomalous mid-range shooting performance, but I do think he's like when healthy, he's a game-changing defensive player.
Yes.
And, I mean, a lineup with him at the 5 and LeBron at the 4, you could put me, you, and Schwinn out there at 1, 2, 3. They're gonna score a lot of points, you know?
So, yeah.
And probably defend pretty well. So, well, not the three of us, but that is a front court that's set up for defensive success. So I don't, it's all his health, and I'm no medical expert. So, I mean, I do know that 6'11 guys who are aging and have had foot problems and injuries in the past, that's not a great sign, but we don't really know, right? So,
yeah. Last question for you. Assuming they don't make a massive trade of some kind, do you think Phoenix's window has closed, or can the Suns this year still have a shot at winning the title?
The Suns could definitely have a shot at winning the title. How do you survive the turmoil they've gone through, right? Jay Crowder wants out. Their owner is suspended and selling the team, which the Clippers
Aiden probably wishes he could get out if he could.
Yeah, Aiden doesn't seem super competitive. Their best player is Devin Booker. Their second best player, I mean, if we're worried about can Anthony Davis come back to what he was, what are we talking about with Chris Paul? I am like, there are other people who say, you know, them just dying in the playoffs is a sign of Chris Paul's just aging. I'm not going to go that far. He had a couple off games, but it is a ticking clock, right? And I don't think Devin Booker is that. Like, I don't think Devin Booker is as good as Jason Tatum.
No.
I mean, I don't think it's as far off as your voice sounded. I think it's more like one of them is 9th and one of them is like 13th. But I'm a little bit down on the Suns. I don't think they get out this year.
Yeah, that energy seems to have changed very quickly around them for obvious reasons. It's not. I said yeah about Tatum because to me, if all things are somewhat comparable, and one guy is like 6'11" and the other one is like 6'5", like I'm going to take the 6'11" guy almost always. I've always liked Devin Booker.
That's what everyone says on Tinder too. You got a 6'11" guy and a 6'5" guy. I'm taking the 6'11" guy.
Well, on Tinder is for all right. I'm going to go before I make any Tinder jokes, especially about height. So that is going to be all for this episode of the Believe Knicks podcast. Oh, here's your last little trivia. Stacy, this was our 47th episode. No Nick has ever worn the number 47. No Nick has ever worn the number 48. One Nick that you have watched play for this team did wear the number 49. Any ideas who it could be? And while he ponders that, please let me remind everybody that the show is presented by BetOnline.
Go ahead. Is that a white guy?
No.
Yeah. Kurt Thomas wore 40.
Kurt was 40. For some reason, this number, I think because it's the product of a square, like I have never, ever forgotten this dude, even though he's not a crazy memorable player.
Now I feel Archie Barrett's a product of a square.
Yes. Those guys stick with you for some reason. But
so is Rose and I guess Eddie House. She 49. Was, yeah. I can go through all of them. I can't think of a 64. It's not Kurt Thomas. It's not a white guy that's.
It's not a white guy. I was a guard.
49 at guard?
Very good in transition. Had absolutely no jump shot. Was amazing in transition and equally bad pulling up for a J.
That describes a lot of Knicks guards. Alfred this was Payton was number 6.
This was a Scott Layden import.
It wasn't Sergio Rod. No, he's white. Can't be Doo-Doo. Is it Chris Duhon?
It is not.
It was like zero,
before,
right?
Before Duhon's time. This is more like 02, 03 Knicks.
Shandon Anderson?
Shandon Anderson, yes.
Wow. I did not remember that he was 49. I remember I heard of Shandon Anderson on the Jazz.
He was a nice bench player for them.
And he played in the finals, so when the Knicks got him, I was like, oh, we got this guy who was playing against Jordan and the Bulls.
They brought him and Howard Eisley in at the same time.
Yep, yeah.
I have never seen an NBA guard who was worse at running a fast break than Howard Eisley. And Shandon Anderson was incredible because once a year, Shandon Anderson would come down on a 3-on-1 and absolutely yam it in somebody's face. And he wasn't a huge guard, but he had hops. And he would he was a 1-foot, one-hand dunker. And he would yam it on people once a year. You always get so excited by that. But the other 81 games, Shandon could play some defense. I'll leave it on a positive. Shandon could play some defense.
Shandon Anderson could play some defense. Do you know what Howard Eisley is doing now?
I have no idea what Howard Eisley is doing now. I'm assuming he's still botching fast breaks.
He coaches guards for Juwan Howard at the University.
Does? All right, let me know how your team looks this year in transition. I'll be very interested to see how that's gone. Yeah. All right. That's it for everyone for now. Maybe you will hear from us after the season opener, which remember is Wednesday night against Memphis and Stacy's most overrated Ja Morant. We will talk to you all later.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.